You're listening to Catholic Forum. I'm Bob Krebs. Father Roberto Baldicelli has been a priest for 70 years. He is one of the most well-known and most well-respected people in the Wilmington area, and I'm happy to welcome Father Roberto to Catholic Forum. Hi, Father.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here.
It's a real honor to have you on the program. Now, you've been a priest for 70 years, and we're going to talk about some of the wonderful accomplishments that you have undertaken and things that you've accomplished here in your long ministry. But before we do that, I want to talk to you a little bit about your childhood in Italy. Where were you born, and tell me a little bit about your childhood and your home life.
I was born in a little village in the mountains between Florence and Bologna, which during the last war, it was the Gothic line, the end of the fight in Italy. And there was a small village, and there were only four grades in the school. So when I was 10 years old, I was it.
Mm-hmm.
Now where to go. And I remember that one day, I had an uncle who was an oblate, and he used to come to see his mother that lives with my family. And one morning I came back from serving mass, and he was outside of the house talking to my mother. And when I got in, he said to my mother, "What are you going to do with Roberto?" She said, "I don't know. I don't know what to do with him. He's finished the grade, fourth grade. He tells me he wants to be a priest. I have no way to send him nowhere, even if I could." My father, her husband, was an immigrant in the United States. He was working in coal mines around Chicago. And so the priest, my uncle, said to me, "Do you want to be a priest?" "Yeah." "Would you come with me to Rome and I would send you to school?" "Yeah." "You mean you will leave your mother?" I look at her. "Yeah." He took me to Rome.
At 10 years old, you left your mom and went to Rome to begin your schooling for the priesthood. Was that difficult for you, Father?
Well, my vocation is strange. It's not that I receive a call, you know, visible and so forth. But I had the conviction, that I was called to be a priest. Really, either I like it or not. Yeah. It was not exactly an attraction. I saw one priest I admired, not at all. The priest in the parish was a very old man, bent in half, I guess he was over 90, my age now. And so, you know, I said mass for him and things like that. But it was really a conviction, yeah. You know? And the conviction that you cannot say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was something that you've had as long as you can remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. So, if your uncle had been a Franciscan or a Dominican, you would have been a Franciscan or a Dominican.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It took me to Rome, and we had a scholasticate there. We had students from every part of the world, you know, coming from different provinces of the congregation. And they were studying in different universities of Rome. So they were all tall. To me, they were tall. And they were speaking every language in the world except Italian. So I never thought what they were talking about. And then finally, after finishing high school, I asked, you know, to be an oblate. So they sent me to France for the novitiate, because we're not novitiate in Italy. And there happened the first incident that in my mind, after reflecting especially now, I saw the providence of God, I would say, that I was destined to come here. You see, being only, let's say, the second oblate, okay, possible, okay, logically you would think, well, you are going to work in Italy and start help to the oblate to start, you know, in the country. And so, always in my mind, you know, eventually I'm going to go to Italy. In fact, after the ordination, I was sent to Italy, okay, for 1 year. But during my novitiate, in the evening, we were 7 scholastics, novices. We were peeling potatoes every night for the community next day. And one evening, in that basement, out of the darkness came a man. He was not wearing a cassock like all the priests here. He was wearing suit, black suit, Roman color. I'm looking at him and wondering, who is he? You know, where he comes from? He comes in. He didn't say a word. He looked each one of us intensely. Are you Roberto? Yeah. When are you going to be ordained a priest? I am 16. Hurry up, for God's sake. I need you, Saint Anthony. And he left.
You were 16, and someone came and said, hurry up, we need you at St. Anthony.
That was 1929.
Yeah.
The parish had been founded for 5 years. He was the only one speaking Italian. He had the confession of everybody. So he was looking desperately for someone to help him. We speak Italian. The only qualification was speaking Italian.
Who was that, Father?
Father Tucker.
That was Father Tucker.
The founder.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He went to Europe, evidently, you know, looking for the oblates over there to see if they found someone to send him here. And they told him there is no oblates. The only one is at the novitiate. Hope he's going to come out right.
So then, I guess in 1936, you were ordained. You were, what, 24 years old?
22 and a half.
Yeah, 22 and a half. And did you come to St. Anthony's then, or did you another year in Italy?
Then they sent me to Italy. And Father Tucker came the following year. So now you're ordained. Are you coming? I said, Father, I don't say I'm coming. You know, if you attack military, you go where they send you.
That's
know?
Right, yeah.
It's not that. Do you like to come? I don't know. You know, to go to the United States at the time was like going to the moon, you know. Far away country, God knows, you know. And we had that kind of feeling, you know, that I like or dislike, but I'm the only Italian here, you know, I guess, better stay in Italy, and I mean, of course it made to go to the United States. So I don't know, I go anywhere they send me. Okay, I take care of it. Get ready, we're going to leave the 30th of September from Le Havre on a boat, okay? I will send you a note. Okay. A few months later, 1 month later, came, everybody was at the general chapter, they were elected the new general and so forth. So I was home in that house there with some young students. And the superior of the house was not there. He was at the chapter. So he came, and he came late at the end of September. And at the dinner in the evening, he says to me, I'm sorry I came late. I said, Father, no problem. Everything was okay. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry I came late. Okay. Then he gave me an envelope. Open up. You are hereby appointed assistant pastor at the Church of Notre Dame de l'Espérance in Petit Ivry. try to be there as soon as you can, but no later than the 15th of September. What is this for? Can't you read? You know French? You mean they send me to Notre Dame de l'Espérance? What is that? It tells you Petit Ivry. But what is Petit Ivry? It's Paris. It's attached to Paris. They send me to Paris? See what it says. Oh, my God. Look. It says to be there as soon as I can. But no later, September 15th. Today is September 29th. I told you I'm sorry I'm late. Oh.
Oh. Oh, my.
He says, look, I check. The train at 9 o'clock this evening. Rush up, and you can go right now and catch the train. You'll be in Paris tomorrow morning. I said, well, I still supposed to see my family. Not this year. Got my back. Catch the train next day. I was in Paris. The pastor was there to wait for me. I don't know. They call him. I don't know. You are late. You are late. I said, I don't want to hear it. You are late. I said, okay, I'm late. We took the subway. We get out of the subway. So we make a shortcut. It's easy to fast go to the parish. We were crossing what they call the banlieue parisienne, which was an area between the outside of the city and was a field open for artillery in case of defending the city. But after the Prussian War, you know, they found it was not valuable at all. So they intend to have a big park around the city, but they never did. So the poorest of the poor, they get up there, put up shacks and so forth. We were crossing that area. Yeah. The police would never get there. They had no water. They had no electric. It was a mess. Absolutely a mess. So we were crossing like that, you know. There was a man there holding a post. And there was a man banging down, like building a fence or something. So he said to the other, hey, John, guess what I would like to do? What would you like to do? I'd like to get the head of that skinny priest over there, put on top of that post and smash on it with my sledgehammer. I said, welcome to Paris.
And how long were you in Paris?
I was there for 2 years.
Yeah.
It was one of the best years of my life.
Oh.
Tough Paris, poor as it could be. And Petit Ivry was the center of French communism.
Huh.
The center. And it was a regular fight every day, you know. Mm. I love it. I love it. A strange combination of things. Anyway, when I go to Italy, if I can go to Paris, I have to go to see that parish. Mm. I love it. Mm. I got there like a kid, you know. I was 23, but university, you know, great ideas, you know. There it was the tough, the trenches, you know.
Mm.
And you were really working for the church. As I said, I left Paris in a hurry to go to Italy, because of the war. And I was there during the 6 years of war. And between Rome, Albano, and Anzio was next to it. And the first year was fairly, not much too much problem, except we were hungry. But then, when the Americans landed in Anzio, for the first 2-3 weeks, they didn't move. And there was nobody against them, nor the Germans, nobody. We wondered why they don't come up. Then the Germans arrived, then there was a fight war. And the poor Americans were there on the flat area near the sea, and the Germans were on the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
It was an unfair game. You know, they're shooting down there and killing everything. And finally, that was over. And the day the Americans arrived in Rome, I went back to Albano, you know, that is in between. We had the house on the Appian Way. And I was wondering if the house was still up, because Kesselring had given order to blow up all the houses on the Appian Way to slow the advance of the American army. And our house was occupied by the German. Yeah. That was up. When I got there, I met a Christian brother. Hey, Rob, you're still alive? Hey, I'm still alive. And, you know, was an American soldier looking for you? Oh, no, American soldier looking for me. I have no American soldier. Maybe you're looking for my uncle. No, he said Robert. He knew you were living here. At that moment, a jeep passed by. Whoa, break in, get up. Was Niedermayer, a classmate of mine, in Fribourg, where I studied 5 years in Fribourg. Oh. Can you imagine? Met there. And then, after that, you know, we were in Rome. And for us, the war was over. And there was food again, peace and things like that. And the Germans were in the north, where my family is. And one day, my brother, his brother was a priest also, Rabbi Blake, he was chaplain of the Visitation Sisters, where the house a little bit outside of Rome, the outskirts of Rome. We were bombed there terribly during the war. So 3 months were gone, the Americans were in Rome. My brother said to me, you know, there is Sister Pasqualina who is here talking to the nuns at the Visitation. She brings gifts from the United States. She was a nun, a German nun, that Pope Pius XII had as a nuns taking care of household in Berlin. When he became Pope, he had them to come back to the Vatican. She was taking care, she was 3-4 nuns, you know, taking care of cooking, serving the table, I guess. A very smart, very intelligent woman. So when outside, I met her. I said, are you stationed here? I says, yes. Yeah, yeah. Can we help you? Well, sister, you help the sister. We are all the same group. It's fine. Can I help you personally? Then I remember that Father Niedermayer said to me, Father Tucker is still waiting for you. So that flashed my mind at that moment. You know, I said, well, sister, I don't know, maybe in the future let's go to the United States, I don't know. But in case, you know, maybe I'll need the help of the Vatican, you know, to get there, you know. What is your name? The next morning, a young man came from the Vatican. Are you Roberto Baldocelli? He says, yeah. You are Roberto Baldocelli, you personally? Yes, I am Baldocelli. I have this for you. He gave me an envelope. What is this? I opened up with a card, handwritten. His Holiness Pope Pius XII would be grateful to the Ambassador of the United States of America if you could help Father Roberto Baldocelli to reach your country for pastoral ministry. Signed, Pope Pius XII. That nun, evidently, I guess that, was serving the meal at the Pope. Where you go today? I went there. Oh, incidentally, you know. You don't have to know it.
You don't still have that note, do you, Father?
No, I had to give to the ambassador. He kept it, of course. So he said to me, you know, the war, I can't get you. First of all, when I got there, you know, I had been wounded. My head was like this. I had clothes for the first 4 years, the same clothes, you know. Yeah. We were like pigs, you know. And he was looking at his throat, looking at me. The two didn't match. He said, what is man?
Father, how did you get wounded? Do you mind sharing that with us?
When the Germans arrived in Rome, against Anzio, okay, we were told to leave this town. Across the street from our property, there was the villa of the Pope, Casa Gandolfo villa. Mm-hmm. Was the real end of it. So the director of the villa, I knew him. He said, if you have any problem, come in with your kids. So I moved in when the Germans told us to leave. And he told me, I need your help. The Pope said, open the gate to everybody. Let everybody come in. No. Now, I'm alone to this. We have 4 or 5 buildings. So take this building. Do what you can. Put them in as much as you can. So give me that building. It was a building of the students of propagation of the faith. They were there in the summer. They couldn't go home. It was too far away, you know. And the place was empty. So I put there about 2,000 people. It was made for 250. In the dining room, we're sleeping on top of the table, below the table, you know. Unbelievable. And then they start, their mother with babies. They want milk. They need milk. So we called the Vatican. The Vatican was sending about 7, 8, 9 gallons of milk every morning. And the building was made like in a T-shape. Mm-hmm. And at the corner there, there was a fountain. And I had the milk on top there, and gave a soup of milk, you know. They would give a number, and I was coming in. And go, you know, just one glass, that's all. And one morning, the plane started to come, you know, here was bomber. And I told the people not to stay in certain corridor because there was a crack on the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And the architect told me, don't let them stay there. It may fall down without being hurt. So we were there. One man said, one man was friend Father Mario. And there were 2 girls helping with that milk. Where are you going to go? I stay here, I'm going to go. And my sergeant had the oil of 3 months, put my finger in it, ready to go. Nothing came. The German was shooting, the plane went by. So we started to give milk again. Second wave. Started to bomb. Mm-hmm. And so bomb fell in the Vatican property. So when I hear the women screaming from that corridor, I left the fountain to go on the doorway to get out. The bomb fell in the fountain.
Oh.
Kill everybody. Oh. And I guess, a woman was following me, I guess. When I stopped on that doorway, she was in back of me. But she was short. She could hold the chaperone. My head was like this, tearing out, you know.
Yeah.
And I was 18, cut to here. Mm. And then after that, you know, about 4 months, 5 months later, I got a call from the American embassy. Mm-hmm. There's a boat ready in Genoa, leaving tomorrow morning. A place for you if you want to take it. So I went there, got the boat. 29 days on the sea. And I got here.
33 years old, first time in America, yeah. Coming to Wilmington to work with Father Tucker.
Yeah, but my problem was language. I didn't know any English. Father Niedermayer, the one I met in Albano, when we were scholastic in Fribourg, one day said to me, Robert, let's make a deal. You teach me Italian, I teach you English. I said, no. Why not? I said, Joe, I'm fed up with languages. Okay? Simply fed up. Latin, and then Greek, and then French, and now even Hebrew. Goodness sake. How much can you take? Well, I'm going to do with English anyway. Yeah. I'm going to do the English. The language I would use the most all my life. And I didn't get it. So I got here in English.
But at that time, most of the people in this area spoke Italian, correct?
I spoke Italian. I thought I was speaking Italian. I was speaking the dialect of the region, which I did not know. I mean, I guess, you know. So when I was talking Italian, they would not really understand me. And when they were talking to me, I couldn't understand them. But, you know, we could adjust it fast on that, no problem.
So what year was it when you moved to Wilmington? What year was that? What year did you move to Wilmington?
46. Mm-hmm. 46.
And you were assistant pastor?
Italian passport number 24. Can you imagine?
Italian passport number 24. Wow.
24 cities and live in Italy after the war. When I came to that sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was your father still alive at that point in Chicago?
Yes.
Yeah. And you began your ministry here at St. Anthony's, and yeah. You were an assistant pastor for a number of years?
For 3 years with Father Tucker. And Father Tucker left in 49, and we had a new pastor. And then The new pastor was especially a teacher. And Father McCoy, he had been principal of Salesianum School. And he was interested in education. So we had a great school on an old building which was condemned. And we decided to have a new school. It was too small to start with. But there was no money. And interesting the way the Bishop Fitzmaurice finally gave permission. And because there was no money, we had in mind to build a school of volunteer labor, same way that the parish had been built, the church in great part. And for 4 years, 5 years, we built a great school. And the kids were in charge of the school when the school was not finished. And then, while the school was being built, the girls were on the 8th grade. They were surrounding me all the time, and I would say to me, can you help us to go to high school? I said, sure, no problem. Why not? I have no idea of the difficulty to go to high school for girls. And finally, because there was pressure, I went to see Ursula. I said, I have a dozen girls, you know, they like to come to school, they like to make, what's supposed to do? What? We have no room. It's only a dozen girls. In the room for the and even one. Oh my God. So they try St. Elizabeth. I tried not doing the same thing. And then, talking to the pastor, you know, and he was concerned. And we make an agreement. You finish the building, I get the faculty with high school, we put high school and grade school together in a new building and start Padua Academy. Mm.
What year was that, Father, that Padua Academy began? Do you recall?
It began in 1954. Mm-hmm. 1 year after the school was built. Oh. It was barely the roof, you know. This class, first class, they used the gym for the first time on the day of their graduation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Father McCoy remained here for 10 years, from 49 to 59. So in 59 he went to establish a new school. So they named me pastor at the end of the year of 59.
And how long did you serve? What year did you complete your service?
I was pastor for 29 years. And that long, mainly because the two schools, grade school and high school, in the same building, they start to grow. Especially, you see, Father McCoy was a great man, a great teacher. So when we opened the school, we intend to take care of our girls. When the word came out with a school for girls, everybody applied. And what are you going to do? So we accepted them all. And he said, I remember, with scholarship, I didn't know what he meant by that, he meant free. And we had Padua Academy for many years, teaching every girl coming to our school, parishioner or non-parishioner, free. At the end, they had to pay something. They had to buy two tickets for spaghetti dinner every month.
Wow. Yeah. Times have really changed.
Unfortunately. Yeah. But then, when the school started to grow, there was no room for Padua Academy anymore. Someone had to get out. Bishop Pyle was there at the time, so I told him. He said, Rabbi, what can you do? He said, you have to go to Padua Academy. We can't. How are you going to put them? Oh my God, we struggled anyway we could, you know. So finally, the bishop made some kind of survey, referendum, in the diocese to see what people would like to have, you know. And they came up with a suggestion to have, I think, 3 high schools, so many great schools, whatever it is. And to me, they were saying no, you know, to Padua. I said, well, how are you going to have a new high school and close one? Mm-hmm. So they told me, okay, we had to keep Padua Academy. We need a new building. And permission to give a new building at the condition we do volunteer labor because there was no money. So 7 years for the Padua Academy construction. They told me to build a school as big as possible because it would be the only school in this area, you know. Yeah. Corpus Christi had some kind of high school. And also St. Hedwig's, something commercial, I don't know what. They told me they're going to close. So we built as big as we could, but we have only one block, you know. We had to buy the houses and so forth. And we have about 650 girls at Padua. Yeah. And only about 70, 75 are from the parish.
Mm. Let's talk about some of the institutions here at St. Anthony's. When you think of St. Anthony's, you think of several things. You think of the Italian festival. How did that come about? Was that started by you, Father?
Well, we used to have what they used to call a carnival. Mm-hmm. And one day I was talking to a priest from St. Louis, Missouri. He had some kind of convention of parochial parishes with nationality. He told me, he was talking about what he was doing in St. Louis. And I asked him, how you get the money to do that? So a festival. What is the festival? This and this and this. It's like, don't mention the name carnival. Festival. What is the difference? Ethnic. Go ethnic. Italian food. Italian music. Italian this. Go ethnic. You will see. So I said, okay. He tried. And it came what it is.
And what year was that, do you recall?
I think it was 1974, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, 74, 75.
Did you have any idea that it would become as big as it is?
No, no idea.
Yeah.
But we decided to go big right away, you know. And we had the music, we had bands, we had big entertainers, you know, we spent $5,000-$6,000 to get a big name to sing, you know. Mm-hmm. It was not the rule, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that you think about when you think of St. Anthony's is Via Crucis.
Yeah.
Now, when did that start? And were you involved in the start of that?
Yeah, when I came here, I used to see in the wall of the rectory pictures. And I was asking, what is this? The Via Crucis. What is Via Crucis? Fataka told me that it was a pantomime and make people realize. So when Father McCoy came, he was very much in favor of theatrical presentation. And I was pushing him to do it. Yes, we are going to do it. But he never did. Okay? I don't know why. So when I became pastor the first year, I said, I'm to start. And I started to put the words around, you know, if someone would help and so forth. And came three women, among them with Dorothy Arthur. And we have a script. We have no script. So we start from zero. Okay? And Dorothy Arthur is the one who did the most. Yeah, she got the script and things like that and so forth, you know. And we had the first year, and the last rehearsal was to me, I said, oh my God, what am I going to say? Then again, it was fantastic, you know, when we were there, no words, you know, just the kids were in the mood, you know, and it went. Yeah. The real thing is, I realized that more and more later, that we do not try to be realistic. It was only given the suggestion of the event, and then the simplicity of the children. No actor, you know, no beer and things like that, you know. A child, you know, who believes in it, you know. And he captured the thing, you see. And then the people realized it was not a show. It was a prayer, you know, at the same time, you know. And that was the real secret of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been going on for many, many years.
45 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing that you think of at St. Anthony's is St. Anthony's in the hills. How did that come about?
I came back from the visiting hospital in 1960. I was pastor a year. And there were kids playing at the rectory, playing in the church. hide-and-seek underneath the pews. I said to one of my assistants, a big parish like ours should have something better than that for the kids in the summer. You need a camp. What is a camp? You know, a place in the woods, you know. Oh, I said, no, when I was in Paris, we had two camps, one for the boys, one for the girls. It was great, great. That evening, it was a Sunday, we used to have the Miracles Medal devotion. And two people were there every Sunday. It doesn't matter. He had to come back from Atlantic City. Was Agostino Fortunato, one of the trustees, and Frank Rubino. He was started his building, his housing. And I was giving the Miracles Medal to Kiss at the end. I said, Frank, I said, see you. Came in the second, what do you need? So you buy these farms, you know, for your development. You must have a corner you cannot build. Can you keep a little corner for me, for the kids? I have a place. Tomorrow I take you there. Look, I have no money. I'm in debt all over, for the school, for this and this. Don't worry, I'll help you. 5-6 acres, $2,000, I help you. I take you tomorrow, I take you to see the place. So I came the next morning, we all went on this station wagon, and going, you know, on 48. Frank, where are you going? To see the camp. What is it? In Pennsylvania? I don't go to the end of the world. It's right here, don't worry about it. It's another problem, though, another problem, big problem. I thought it was 10 acres. It's 140. They want $100,000, Frank. Let's go back home. You have to say it. So if I get there, it was a virgin forest, you know, untouched by human hand for 50 years. It was a little lake, a little walk like that. And I was thinking of the one villa in Paris, you know, it was a little place. What you could do with this? Oh, my God. And then came home, not even think of it, you know, even afraid to tell the bishop the idea. And I found out that the bishop had in mind at that time to buy a property of, what was his name? Was making airplanes in Newcastle. Belanca. And they're going to buy his property and to make a retreat house and camp. And he used to talk to the diocese. They make him. 1 year later, I went to see Bishop Pyle. I had to tell him, you think. Say, anything else? No. Sure? No. Nothing? Bishop, can I buy a piece of land for a camp? Good idea. Tremendous idea. Place like Salesiana, said, no, it's bigger, Bishop, bigger. Over 100 acres. Oh, it's so big. I wish you want to have the kids for 3 months to be under the same tree. Yeah. Okay, get it. I said, I expect, you know, refusal. Or, you know, I said, he did not understand, you know, maybe tomorrow it's going to be, he didn't put it right to me, you know. I said, Bishop, there are difficulties. It's not in Delaware. It's in Pennsylvania. Don't worry, we tell the cardinal there, he'll say yes. Came home. I go, Frank Rubino. Is still that place still available? But then you're gone. Put the deposit. And you got the place eventually. But the major reason to me was not only to a place for kids. I had the feeling already at that time that the human family was disintegrating. And I was saying, I believe that a key ministry of the church today should be focused on the family to fight that disintegration. Because the family disintegrates, it's done. Every way. Nationally, physically, everything. And so the camp became a youth and family center, a place where we were going to make facilities and programs, anything whatsoever that could help the family. Mm-hmm. That was the general idea.
and you saw that 45 years ago, that we're going to have these problems that we're having today.
I never thought that it would go so bad as it is. Yeah. Never thought of that.
And that's what you're doing now in your retirement, right, Father? You're spending a lot of time up at St. Anthony's in the
Well, you see, people look in our buildings, they think the parish is over-rich, you know, to have building, beautiful buildings as we have, you know, the church and Paul Academy and our great school, you know. And we have been broke from the first day. So the only thing we did, there's not one building that we did that was not done on volunteer labor, except the Antonian, mm-hmm. because of federal money, you know, in it. So they came for the same thing. Recycled material, volunteer labor, all equipment, and so on and so forth. So it takes time to do it. Mm-hmm. So we did the first thing, you know, first to build the road and things like that. But I was lucky. One day a friend of mine took me down to Lyon, British, Bear, Delaware. He was in charge of a program sponsored by the federal government, teaching people to operate the big equipment. Because they made there with the crane, taking the dirt here, put in there, taking there, put in back and forth. You know. So why don't you do something good? So we succeeded in convincing the government to pay for 30 men for the winter time to work at the camp. So we built the road and built the lake and this and this and this, you know. It was winter, could not work all the time, it was too much rain, but we started that way. And then volunteer labor, equipment, and so forth, you know. And we did what you could do, you know. Mm-hmm. And we, more or less, I call myself, we did the phase one. Especially we took care of children. Mm-hmm. You have camp and this, you know, like that. But now we have to go further than that, we took care of teenagers, which is the most important part. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we start now on that stage.
Mm-hmm. Of all the things that you've accomplished, is there any one thing that you're the most proud of?
You know, when you say that I accomplished nothing. What was done here was the parish. Yeah. These people here, they asked for a church of their own. And the bishop said, no, you can't. You don't have a penny. I cannot help you. I have no money either. How can you have a parish? They insisted violently. So they gave in. Father Tucker told me that he got the families with his name pastor because he was the only one speaking Italian. He was an Irishman. He had been in Rome for 5 years. So he said, I got the head of the families and told them, well, I'm your pastor, you're my parishioners, we have to find a place, you know, to put the little church. I guess you have to build a church in wood, you know, simple, because we have no money. Father Tuck, did you say wood? Yeah. You know. Whoever heard of a church in wood? You want to build a cathedral. We have no money, don't you know that? The stones are cheap. We buy the stone, we build on our own. We know how to build. Is that the volunteer labor 1924, still existing today? Mm-hmm. Beautiful. It's the community. Mm-hmm. It's the community.
Of your years in ministry, what has been the most rewarding aspect of your work?
To be with people and working with them.
Yeah. It's being with
to
the
be
people.
To be part of the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was learning more than I was teaching. Mm-hmm. You know. They will allow me to mix mortar. That's all I could do at the beginning. And work with them, you know. And it was a family work, you know. Mm-hmm. Putting together a body like that and so forth. And, you know, the volunteer work did something marvelous. There are many of these Italian people, especially men, you know, changing country and so forth. They didn't go to church anymore. Many didn't go. By coming to work, they start to come to church.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. he told me to be part of the family, you know, that he wanted to do, he share, you know, we doing mine, and he doing mine, and this, you know, involving that was a chaos, you know, from the beginning to the end. But we had the ideal was, this is a community, okay, the Italian community and neighborhood, we are not discriminating, but, you know, our efforts are our own people. And everybody has a talent. And you are obliged to use your talent for the benefit of others. So even the kids were working, you see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When spaghetti and the kids were working dishes, breaking dishes sometimes. But, you know, they were part of the team, mm-hmm. you see. Mm-hmm. And that was the most beautiful thing that I've seen, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. That day back in 1936 when you were ordained, did you have any idea that you'd be a priest for 70 years?
No. No idea whatsoever. Most of all, no idea I would come here. No idea I would do what I'd work what I did. No idea.
What advice would you give to a young man who might be listening to this, who would think maybe he has a call to the priesthood?
The first thing, I think, you have to be convinced, read of your faith. Okay. And to understand the gospel deeply. To understand that the gospel is a paradox. To accept the gospel as a paradox. Not to try to embellish it. To give a common sense to it, an appeal to it. Paradox. And the paradox of the gospel is that you are made for others. And everybody is made for others. And the commandment of love is to serve others. And to be in that service for everybody. Part of every family, sharing joys and sorrow and to give yourself to it totally, completely, without any hesitation, you know. You cannot look at the priesthood as a career or you are like another man, another person. The fact that you're a priest, it is something that Christ gave you for others, and not for you. And there is no, that is the essence to me. That is the essence.
Well, Father Roberto Baldicelli, your ministry has been a blessing to the people here in Wilmington and St. Anthony's Parish. And God has blessed you abundantly over the years. And it's really been a blessing for me to chat with you today. And I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to be with us on the program. Any final words you want to say?
No, the only five words I would say is this: don't present that as my achievement or why this and this like that. The achievement is the gospel, you know. Yeah. And the achievement is a community who believes in it and work for it. And we are all brothers and sisters, you know. Each one is on mine, each one is on thing, and enthusiastic to work for the gospel. That is it. When someone say, you know, great, you did this and this, I did four different things, you know. We all did. We all work. That poor woman there who was cooking spaghetti for 50 years in that kitchen has more reward before God than me. You see? It's the widow in the temple put a penny in the thing, you know. The greatness is the giving, the generosity.
Well, we wish you many more years of health and ministry.
No, please. I am tired already. Sometimes I said, Lord, is your computer working? You know, I'm 94. What do you expect me to come out?
Father, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.